From the Professional Disc Golf Association, this is PDGA Radio News.
All right, I know this is not ideal for your newfound nutrition business, but Sarah, just level with me a little bit here. I want to talk to you about cereal. What is your favorite cereal?
Ooh, that's a hard question. I can't choose between Cinnamon Toast Crunch and Reese's Peanut Butter Puffs. Those are my two favorites.
Oh, Reese's Peanut Butter Puffs.
Oh my God, I love anything that is chocolate and peanut butter combined. It doesn't matter what it is. Yeah.
Perfect. All right. I have thoughts on that, which we will revisit in just a minute. This is PDGA Radio. I'm Steve Hill. That's Sarah Sinclair. We are going to talk a little bit more than cereal today, but it's I've been eating a lot of it lately during quarantine. So we'll come back to that. Nice. But we are going to talk Disc Golf Pro Tour restart today. Big news on that front. Kale Laviska is going to join the show. Disc Golf's most handsome man, objectively, right, Sarah?
Yes.
We've discussed this.
We have both voted, and therefore it is law.
It's an award. We'll put it on a plaque. Maybe we'll get one of those sweet PDJ obelisks. No, I'm just kidding. But Kale's coming to the show to talk about all things Minnesota and what he has been up to. He's been a very busy man. The triumphant return of the hot rounds today, Sarah, because we had some competition over the weekend, and then we're going to debut a new segment called Run It or Lay Up. That'll be at the end of the show, but I do want to talk a little bit more. So Cinnamon Toast Crunch, I think we are on the same page 100%. That's like in my top three. You probably can't see it behind me. Right now they have like this goofy face on the back of the Cinnamon Toast Crunch boxes, and they have different ones on each box. And I was collecting all of the boxes to like make a decoration on my wall. And I have too many of them right now because I've eaten a lot of it lately. That and Frosted Flakes. Those are my jams. All right.
Frosted Flakes is good, but it's a little too basic for me.
It's a classic. It is classic. I've never had the Reese's cereal.
That's so funny because when I brought that up to Sean, who's a wee bit older than me, he had also never heard of it, didn't know it was a thing. And I was like, I'm pretty sure it's a generational thing.
I definitely know it's a thing. I just never have tried it. Did you ever have the Oreo O's cereal?
No, but I do love eating Oreos. So maybe I should try that.
It's hard not to. All right. Anyway, that's, we like to talk about food, but more importantly, let's talk about the Disc Golf Pro Tour. Their big announcement today, they're going to be restarting on June 26th. They have a couple new events, a couple canceled events. So let's kind of go through the things you need to know about the Disc Golf Pro Tour starting up, Sarah. First of all, San Francisco Open and Portland Open are canceled. Any big surprises to you there?
No, especially San Francisco Open. I mean, it's in an area that is probably going to be continued to shut down for a little while, and being very conservative on their guidelines around Corona. So and then it sounds like
it's a bummer. Look, it's not happening for the West Coast right now, unfortunately. I'm out here, and you know, we are starting to open things up and everything, but it's kind of hard at this point, like with just so much day-to-day uncertainty. SFO tried to move back a little bit. This was supposed to be SFO weekend, and then they were going to move back a little bit more. So I'm bummed for those guys, bummed for Portland to not get an event this year, because we also don't have the Beaver State Fling. The fans up there are tremendous, so we will have to pay it back to them next year. Another thing on this list with the Disc Golf Pro Tour restart before we get to the big things, the Jonesboro Open rescheduled to October 1st through 3rd. I'm not sure the exact drive time, but that's the weekend right before USDGC. I wonder, Sarah, do you?
So from Nashville to Jonesboro, it's about 5 hours. From Nashville to it's about, I want to say like 7 or 8 hours. So that's a pretty, and I'm sure that's not the most, you may not have to go through Nashville to get to from Jonesboro to Rock Hill.
But it's a good, probably 10, 11 hours.
Like that, yeah.
Okay. So, ideal.
But these touring pros are used to being, that's one day's drive. And especially if you've got a touring partner, you just break it up. They're used to making
11 hours and 5 minutes per the Google. That's doable. That's doable. So we'll see. Hopefully that one, as things are currently scheduled, that would be like sandwiched between Pro Worlds and USDGC. Would be quite a busy weekend. But man, disc golfers, I think touring professional disc golfers are going to be pounding the pavement pretty hard as they get back out. And they will start that on June 26th at the Dynamic Discs Open in Emporia, Kansas. So we're getting an Emporia event this year. It's going to be on the Disc Golf Pro Tour. It's going to be an A tier. And it's going to be three rounds only instead of four, all three rounds at the Emporia Country Club. So no big surprises. First event back, Sarah, going to the Country Club. What are your thoughts on that?
It's going to be some fun disc golf to watch for sure. I mean, that course is, it's wide open, but it's situated in a way that it's not just like throw as hard as you possibly can on every hole. But it is also very wind prone. So it will be interesting see wind is one of those things that as you become an advanced professional disc golfer, you obviously have to prepare for that. But as people are kind of coming off the off season and maybe not playing or practicing as much, it may throw some people off, honestly. So that will be interesting to see. And then also just putting in those, we've talked about this before, but for some reason it's easier for me to putt in a wooded situation because I can, it's more confined. You may have an easier time kind of figuring out distance if there's like trees around you. And for some reason, those wide open putts that are just susceptible to wind and all the other conditions can sometimes get in your head a little bit.
Right.
So I think it's going to be a good cool course to start on.
I do too. I think, you know, and I'm not too worried about length. I think, you know, we start the season out in Vegas at a super bomber course. So I'm not too worried about the 10,000 feet of distance really being an issue. I think it's awesome that Emporia is going to host an event. Those guys know exactly what they're doing. Really helps the Pro Tour get back up and running. Stoked about that. And then from there, the tour will move up to Minnesota to play at the Preserve Championship. Brand new event, brand new course that we're going to talk to Kale Leviska about in a little bit. That's going to be on 4th of July weekend. Honestly, and no knock on Emporia. Love Emporia. Love all those guys there. I'm super stoked to see this Preserve Championship.
After talking to Kale, I'm sorry, a little lag there. I'm having some issues with the mute button today or unmuting myself. After talking to him, 110 acres, two different styles of courses. If you know Minnesota golf, you know that there's got to be water somewhere on the course. So it's going to be really fun. And I think, it'll be awesome for him to kind of test drive the course so that he can continue to make improvements for years down the road.
Yeah, same. And I think, you know, I like that we kind of have the opportunity to get Minnesota back in the scene. You know, the Majestics was on the Disc Golf Pro Tour back in its first year with an event at Blue Ribbon Pines. That was infamously the year that Nate Sexton called the course soft and people got really upset about it. And then, you know, now we've got Minnesota back on the tour under some like different circumstances. So I think it's cool. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And I think it's a really, you know, a really unique way to really get the tour back up and running in a reasonable, you know, sensible way. I think one of the things that we kind of talked about a couple weeks ago with Mahmoud Barani, their, the DGPT, media manager, and that you and I think had talked about a little bit, Sarah, was that did it maybe make the most sense to go straight up to Portland to restart the tour? We were always kind of assuming all along that San Francisco was going to be canceled. Didn't really make sense to get everyone from like far flung locales all the way up to the Pacific Northwest to then cart back to Michigan. So this makes a lot more sense. It starts the tour in, you know, a more central location for a lot of players in two states where PDGA sanctioning is currently allowed. You know, California, it's not right now. Oregon, it is, but there were still, you know, difficulties, I think, with city regulations and stuff like that. So I really like it. I'm really happy that we're getting the tour back up and running. And, you know, I think fans and players are going to be stoked. There are some interesting changes I think we should talk about. So with regard to fans, if you are a fan of the Disc Golf Pro Tour, you would be watching it on the Disc Golf Network or Jomez or your internet provider of choice because spectators are not going to be allowed right now for social distancing purposes. apparently they're going to limit the field sizes. Players are only going to be in threesomes. There's not going to be caddies. And then one of the really interesting pieces of this to me, and I read this over at Ulti World, was that they're going to encourage the players on tour to be traveling or, you know, interacting in like pods, if you will, like in groups of six, to kind of, you know, maintain some of the social distancing and not hopefully, you know, spread things, possibly just minimize risk, minimize interaction. That part, I will admit, I think is going to be one of the biggest challenges of getting this started, Sarah.
I think just staying, I mean, I'm just thinking about my own game, like, you know, not if, but when I throw out of bounds and maybe it's like a close call and everyone's coming around and is like, look at, you know, no one's going to think, okay, we all need to look at this disc to see if it's in or out. And we need to also keep 6 feet away from each other at the same time. It's going to feel very unnatural for a long time. Maybe.
Yeah. I mean, look, high fives at hole 18 can't happen anymore. Right. You know, someone puts out and you, as a courtesy, grab their disc and hand it back to them. Like there's going to be, it's definitely going to be a mental shift. It'll be interesting to see how the first couple events go.
Be awkward.
in that regard. Yeah, there could be some awkwardness to it. The other part that's interesting about this whole thing is the tour is going to be providing optional COVID-19 testing to players who want it. And then they will require it for any players who show symptoms or came into contact. So I think they're doing a lot of hard work here as the tour to get this up and running. It feels really like a really responsible implementation of getting back on the road. You know, the other challenge between the travel groups of like six people is, you know, media stuff. Like how do you keep 6 feet of distance with two or three camera crews on one tee pad in some places? So there's definitely going to be, you know, there might be some different camera angles, might be some sharing of footage or shots. It'll be interesting to see how we all adapt to this.
That's another good point about having courses like the Country Club in play. I mean, I'm just thinking about local courses like Tennessee golf is so wooded typically. And there's so many places where there's not even space for three or four people that are playing on the card.
Yeah, think about Northwood last year for Pro Worlds.
Oh yeah,
and that's going to be at Ledgestone, and so there's going to be some things that need to be finagled, but without spectators in the mix, that does help. And you know,
and caddies
without caddies, that'll help. And I think everybody, you know, the way I kind of look at it is this: it's much like maybe players might be annoyed or frustrated that they're being asked to travel in groups of six, or that they're being asked to clear off the tee pad and give people space. Like we're all kind of having to sacrifice right now to do the things that we want to do. And if your job is professional disc golfer and you want to be professional disc golfer right now, then you have to adapt and do the things that we have to do. So, you know, I think the love of playing right now is going to outweigh any negativity or challenges that people might see from all this. You know, and I'm just happy that we're going to have it back. We've worked with the Pro Tour to kind of get the schedule up and running. You know, I think one thing I do want to like address maybe a little bit for listeners is like the whole idea of we canceled the National Tour, the Pro Tour is still running and full-fledged tour. You know, number one, four of our six events were canceled and five and six were kind of on the fence. And so we have fewer events to start with. The other part about this that we do kind of need to acknowledge is the Pro Tour is a for-profit entity and they're working, you know, with a different type of budget, working to make money off of the events, you know, with their media plans, media implementation, stuff like that. The PDGA, the goal with the National Tour is it's promotional in nature mostly, and it's to give, you know, professional players a platform, but it is a big operational cost. And right now, you know, operational costs for a nonprofit are a lot different than a for-profit. So, you know, that's really a lot of the just kind of nuts and bolts of that. But we are still working with the Pro Tour. Obviously, we're partners in this whole thing. We're going to be working together for publicity and everything like that. And we're just stoked that they're going to be able to provide the platform right now for players. The rest of the tour, hopefully, you know, will run as planned. Great Lakes, Mid-America. Oh, no, I'm sorry. I'm looking at the Silver Series events, too. Just for the straight DGPT events, Great Lakes, Idlewild, Ledgestone, MVP Green Mountain, and then you've got Jonesboro and the Tour Championship. So you can see all of this over at DGPT.com. And Sarah, we're going to have some picks and stuff to be able to do pretty soon. Yes. Pretty stoked.
I'm excited about that.
And then on other DGPT news, Sarah, you, I know you were probably a little more tuned into this than I was. What happened with the putting? The putting championship?
Yeah. It was pretty exciting. I caught the women's final round live. It came down to Lithicum in Texas and Heather Young in Tennessee, Eastern Tennessee. And Heather Young took it. I don't remember the final scores right now, but Christina had a little bit of some challenges. And I mean, I'm super impressed with Christina. I knew she was a good putter, but you know, she took down some pretty big names throughout the whole competition. And it left her with Heather Young, who was just like Christina and I were texting afterward. And she was just like, yeah, she's a robot. Like there's no beating her. She's just so automatic and has just fine tuned her putting like a monster. And the most impressive thing is that I can't remember if this was during her semifinals round or her finals round, but there were six locations that she was putting from. It started at 25, so 25 to 30, 35, 40, 45, 50. Yeah. So she got all five from 35 and all five from 40.
That's legit.
And nobody else, men and women, had done that. So that was absolutely incredible. I think that was her semifinal round, now that I think of it.
Wow.
Absolutely incredible to watch. So congratulations to Heather. Super proud of you. Yeah, I can't wait to see her play more this year. And then on the men's side, Reed Frescura took down Chandler Fry. And I did not catch that match, but Brian Earhart was actually on the Disc Golf Pro Tour channel with Jeff Spring commentating on the whole thing, and he took Chandler to win. And Reed, I don't know if it was the difference between like Chandler was out in the open, you know, Wynn might have been coming into play, and Reed was in the woods, which is probably a smart move. I probably would have moved my setup into the woods if I had access to that. But yeah, Reed took it down, and it's super cool. I think it's really awesome that two maybe lesser known players at this point took it down, and it wasn't, you know, the Paul McBeth show. He got out pretty early, just saying.
All right.
But cool that other people got a chance to take a win, and it gave some of us spectators something, you know, competitive to watch.
Yeah. Cool. My only takeaway from this is that the lefties rule the world, and that's all that matters. That's all that matters.
So, in the finals, three were lefties, everyone but Chandler.
Right.
And three were Discraft players. Everyone but Heather, who's
that's
Prodigy.
Right. That's right. There we go.
It was cool.
Yeah, yeah, good stuff. Cool. All right. Well, good deal. I'm stoked that the tour did that. And again, like we're really fortunate to have the Disc Golf Pro Tour doing what they do. They've been really great partners through all of this, you know. I mean, they're going to be big in getting everything back up and moving and helping us do that. So thank you to those guys, especially Jeff Spring and Todd Rainwater. And, you know, it's, again, mark your calendars. June 26th, Dynamic Disc Open should be pretty good stuff. And then after that, we have the Preserve Championship up in Minnesota. So let's do this. Let's take a break. We'll come back and we'll play our interview with the man behind the Preserve, Kale Laviska, and then Sarah and I will come back for a little more of the show. So we'll be back here in just a moment on PGA Radio. All right, joining us now on the show for the first time from Minnesota, Kale Laviska. Kale, how's it going, man? I can't believe it's been this long and we have not had you on PGA Radio yet, so I apologize. How's life treating you these days?
Life's treating me pretty well, Steve. I appreciate you both having me on, and better late than never.
Of course, man. So, you know, everything that I see right now is that anecdotally, you've been very busy. It doesn't seem like much of the coronavirus shutdown has really slowed you down. What have you been up to over these last couple months?
Well, where do I begin? I guess it's been quite the interesting year for everybody. Obviously, going into 2020, I was very excited to play a stiffer touring schedule. I wanted to play a lot of the big events. I was planning on heading to Europe for a few weeks, and you know, my focus, and I was very really just really hungry to get out and compete and yeah, do as well as I could this year. And started off the year awesome, you know, played some great events, played well at the first couple pro tour events. And you know, as most of you guys know, when the Waco event hit, essentially that event was shortened due to the COVID-19 virus. And so the tournament gets shortened, and it left a lot of disc golfers, a lot of pro disc golfers wondering, you know, what the next step was, and just so much uncertainty. And it was just, the timing was just crazy, because as I'm driving home from Waco trying to, you know, make sense of all this, like everybody was, I get a call from a property that I had kind of been looking at for like a year. There was a golf course in Clearwater, Minnesota that had gone up for sale last summer, and just a beautiful property right on the Mississippi River. So my realtor and I went and looked at it, and it ended up just being too much because there's a big clubhouse involved, and we were just like, you know, it's just too much to do. We just kind of wanted the land. And so the morning of the last day of Waco, I get a call from the property owner, and he tells me that they sold the clubhouse, and all he's got is the land, and he's wondering if I'm interested. And with, you know, I would have never had time to be able to pull this off, but, you know, with everything happening this year, I was like, you know, now might be the only time in my life where I'll, you know, have the time to do this. And it just seemed like, you know, everything was kind of falling into place. So we went out and looked at it again and decided to pull the trigger on it. And, you know, with everything happened with the virus this year, we just, you know, I was able to devote so much time and energy that I otherwise wouldn't have had into this. And we, you know, I had a team of about 6-7 volunteers that were working with me pretty much every day for weeks and weeks. And we built the Airborne Disc Golf Preserve in about 6 weeks. It was just unbelievable.
Holy cow, this whole thing has come about, and I had no idea. I thought this was like a much longer term project. That's amazing.
It is. I mean, we first saw the property last summer, but yeah, it was the deal was pretty much dead. And then, yeah, literally the day of Waco, I just put it all together. To think about where we're at now, about 3 months later, it's pretty mind-blowing.
What an awesome thing to work on when you don't have any events to play and things are kind of shut down. Sounds like a great thing that kept you busy over the past couple months and are setting for this new event.
It was just like, you know, disc golf, I feel like, you know, the off season had so much awesome positive momentum with the pro tour stuff and with, you know, Brody Smith getting involved, and there's just so much hype around the game, and it got me kind of invigorated to play. So, you know, I just didn't want to, you know, not want to let the year go to waste per se. And so I was like, well, you know, if you know, who knows what the timeline is going to look like for 2020, but you know, I think we can pull this together and at least have an awesome course for me and my friends in the local Minnesota scene to play. Cause I knew how beautiful the land was and how much, you know, how great of courses we could build there. But then, you know, to have people traveling from all over the place to come play. And then, you know, with Jeff Spring just announcing that, with the West Coast cancellations for the pro tour, that they're going to plug us in and give me a shot. And it's just, I can't even really put it into words or fathom all that has happened so fast. It's just, it's amazing.
Yeah, it fell into place amazingly well for you. So for someone who won't be able to get up to play that event this year, unfortunately, what can we expect? Give us the lowdown on like the style, the length. How does it compare to like Blue Ribbon Pines? A lot of people have played in that area.
Yeah, so we have two courses on the preserve, the Timberwolf and the Lynx. The Timberwolf is our championship course. Right now it's a par 61. You know, there's about half of the holes have some, you know, pretty serious water hazard on them. It's absolutely gorgeous, though. I mean, we have like six different ponds on the property. and they're all very deep, and they, you know, a lot of fish and wildlife in them. And one of the ponds flows straight into the Mississippi, which we have 50 acres on the Mississippi River as well. So it's just the setting is what really makes the place so special. I mean, we have, you know, I love the golf holes that we have. They're fair, they're fun, but you know, just being out in that setting is where it's at. And then the Lynx, which is our second course, is a par 57. It's definitely more recreational friendly than the Timberwolf, but it's not easy by any means. It's still challenging. There's, you know, you still have a lot of good, great water views, but just fewer water shots and definitely less distance. But, you know, we have 110 acres on site, and we didn't want to bite off too much in year one. So, but we definitely have plenty of room to have at least one more course on the property. So we dropped in like kind of we modified an old shipping container and had it dropped off. So we have our little mobile pro shop on site, and you know, we're ready to go.
That's wild, man. How did it come up to work with Jeff and the Pro Tour so quick? Obviously, I mean, putting together a course in this short a time and then adding a pretty high profile event on top of it has got to be pretty daunting. What's you know, how are you feeling going into that? What are your expectations for the event?
Well, you know, first off, you know, right when we made the deal happen and got the land, I knew what the vision could be for this place, because, you know, it's an old golf course. Like, you know, it's made for big event play. It's perfect for spectating. It's perfect for filming. So I knew that it, you know, with the way the sport's progressing, I just envisioned a perfect course for a large event, like for something on the Pro Tour. So as soon as I started designing some of the holes, I was already calling Jeff and getting in his ear, telling him, you know, someday you guys are going to be coming here, I promise. I definitely didn't even come close to anticipating it would happen this quick, but yeah, it is daunting. But you know, I have a great crew here, and you know, we've run 8-year events, you know, many years in a row with the Majestic, and we do run a lot of events on our Airborne Disc Golf Tour. So while it is a huge task, obviously, you know, the Pro Tour, they have so much, I mean, they just have so much influence on the event themselves. And Jeff Spring is actually the tournament director for the event. So I'm putting a team in place of volunteers and making the course look ready, but the Pro Tour is kind of running the show on this. So I know we're in good hands.
Now, I mean, longer term, bigger picture, and maybe you haven't thought of this yet, but my bet is you maybe have. You know, you've got this tremendous facility, championship level course, ton of other courses up in, you know, that area. Could this potentially lead someday for you guys up there putting in a bid for maybe a Worlds or something like that?
Yeah, and you know, when people would always ask if we're going to get on the Pro Tour, I would always tell people I'm thinking World Championships, because I really believe in this place and how beautiful it is, and I think it's definitely a possibility. The Pro Worlds were last in Minnesota in 2001. And we did have the Amateur Worlds in the Twin Cities area about 5, 6, 7 years ago. But yeah, that would be great. You know, it's all happened so fast, and I'm so busy with this and some other projects that I haven't really honestly been able to think about the future too much. I'm just trying to, you know, just keep moving forward and doing the best I can this year. And, you know, as people keep coming and playing and enjoying the place and telling people about it and taking pictures, you know, you know, hopefully we will be ready for a bid at some time.
That's awesome.
So there are a lot of amazing courses up in your area. Do you have any courses up there that you think are like an underrated gem that people may not know about?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, everyone knows about Blue Ribbon Pines and Vision Quest, some of the courses we have around here, the private courses. But a course got put in a couple years ago up in northern Minnesota called, it's on an old abandoned taconite mine. So it's a big, deep, artificial lake, and it's super steep hills. It's called, Judson Pit Mine in Buell, Minnesota. And that's, you know, I think that's easily one of the top 5 courses in Minnesota. The place is just beautiful. It's about 3.5 hours north of the Twin Cities, almost to Canada. So not a lot of people get up there, but that's definitely one of the gems of the state.
That's, how many, but you guys have something like 50 courses within like a 30-mile radius or something ridiculous like that, right?
Yeah, it's actually probably closer to like 70, 80. Yeah.
Oh, wow. My goodness. That's wild.
I've got family in Minneapolis, and I was actually just telling my uncle about Bryan Lake Park. I was like, that is the most immaculate, pristine course I've ever played in my life. And just to walk around
been
it.
There?
Yeah, so I played a... Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just saying that, yeah, that's definitely one of the Twin Cities gems. I mean, like, the landscaping there, the way the place is taken care of, it is a pay-to-play facility right on Lake Erie. Yeah, that place is definitely very special.
Yeah, I actually was up there to play the 2014 AmWorlds, and advanced women at that time didn't play Blue Ribbon Pine, so I never actually got up to play that course, but I need to get up again, visit my family, and play the Preserve and Blue Ribbon Pines, and definitely make a destination trip out of it.
I was gonna say, you need like at least like a month there, it sounds like.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, you know, the way things are kind of happening, you know, with the tour this year and with the unfortunate cancellations in the West Coast, it seems like, you know, Minnesota and the Midwest is kind of becoming a destination for hopefully some of the big name touring pros for the next month and a half. And, you know, we were lucky enough to have James Conrad at our league at the Preserve this past Tuesday. I know he's planning on being in this region for a while, and we had Katrina and Austin Hannum up last week to play the Preserve. So hopefully there'll be a lot of big name disc golfers in the area for a few weeks here.
Now, I know you were planning on hitting the tour scene a little bit more this year, but the last few years it does feel like you've been leaning more into the design side of things. What's kind of your day to day look like in the design business?
Well, you know, I started up Leviska Disc Golf Design about 5 years ago. And it started out with me just, you know, doing a couple courses a year, just, you know, trying to get my foot in the door and get some experience and just really have fun with it. And now, you know, five, six years in doing this, it's, you know, we have a really short disc golf season here up in the upper Midwest. You know, in Minnesota, we have about 5 solid months of winter. So the 7 months that I do have has just been packed the last couple of years because the sport's growing so fast. There's so many courses that, you know, so many cities and private landowners that contact me about stuff. So, you know, my first love is competing. And so, you know, but design is something that I want to kind of move my business towards. And so, you know, I've been keeping a pretty good balance of it the last few years. And this year I was really dedicated to, like I said, playing as much as I could and still doing a few big projects. But, you know, with the season kind of on hold, it's allowed me to definitely take on more jobs than I was planning on for 2020.
Would you say you have like when you're looking at designing on a new piece of property, you know, would you say you have like a typical design element or a signature in your personal designs that you're looking to implement?
Well, you know, it really varies from project to project. So, you know, I kind of assess essentially what the community needs first and, you know, and what the land will allow. So, you know, a lot of the courses I built up in northern Minnesota, they don't really have a lot of disc golf in the community. So I'm not going to go in and just, you know, put in a championship course.
Sure.
Although that might be what I want to do. So I kind of, you know, if it seems like this community needs a recreational friendly course and it's a good city park for that, then that's what I'll do. But if, you know, if a golf course owner contacts me, like it's been happening a lot the last couple of years where they say, hey, we want to throw some tournaments here. We want to do, you know, have some big holes and do something more championship worthy. That's when, you know, I get to get a little more creative and kind of dream up something a little bit bigger. So I enjoy doing it all, but it kind of just varies from case to case.
Let's say like you're at the Preserve, what would you consider, and especially let's ask this question now. I don't know why I didn't think of it before. What do you consider like the signature hole at the Preserve when people see this event in a couple weeks, what hole are they going to walk away talking about the most?
Well, I have to say two, because the first one is there's this one green. So this was a golf course for about 30 years. So there's this one particular golf green that's built up. It's a huge retaining wall, beautiful terrace. It's about 30 feet up from this pond. And it's just so picturesque. When you're throwing up to the basket, you're probably about 40, 50 feet below the basket with this big daunting wall right in your face. And it's just, there's something just majestic about it. You can see the Mississippi River that flows right out of the pond. So that I would say is the most beautiful hole. It's not the most difficult or anything. I just wanted it to be like about the beauty of that hole. So that's hole 8. And you may have seen pictures of it, but I think the most infamous hole on the course is going to be hole 18, honestly, because, you know, I wanted to have something special to finish up with. Cause when I was designing it, I was imagining big level events. So I'm thinking what it would be like to come down to the wire, and hole 18 is a 930-foot par 5 where you have to carry water off the tee. And then if you get far enough on your drive, you have the option to carry water on the second shot to go for the pin, or else you have to lay up to the water's edge and then play across.
Wow.
To take the birdie 4. But it's just an epic hole. It's beautiful. I think it's going to be some great score separation. It's going to make it so, you know, even if you're a couple strokes down in the final hole, you still have a chance to go for something.
I'm super excited to watch some people play that hole.
Me too.
So you mentioned that you have not been touring as much in the past couple of years, but when you do get out, you still are able to contend with the best of them. What do you have, a secret or a routine to keep up your game when you're maybe not focusing on it as much?
Well, thank you. I'm 36 years old now, you know, so I've been playing for many years, and I think, you know, just the wisdom I'm kind of gaining is definitely helping me so when I don't get to practice quite as much, I can still kind of, you know, just get locked into competition mode, and it still excites me so much. So I think that's one of my strengths. But also, you know, when I'm not playing big events nationally or worldwide, I'm still, you know, I still just crave competition. So, and we're lucky to have a lot of awesome local tournaments here in Minnesota. So, you know, I have a local competition here that pushes me even at small C tiers and stuff. I mean, there's so many good players coming up that really, you know, I feel like, you know, hopefully I've helped them get better, but they're definitely helping me get better and still pushing me to compete for victories when I'm playing the big ones too. So I think it's, yeah, I guess that combination.
So this, we may be veering into less disc golf territory here, but Sarah and I may or may not have mentioned on the show before in the past that we think that you are disc golf's most handsome player. And so with that in mind, we're not asking you to confirm. We'll just let you take the W on that. But what I do want to know is who would you award second most handsome disc golfer?
Oh my gosh. Well, thank you, I guess, man, you guys are, this is the question.
These are the hard hitting questions right now. Yes.
Yeah.
There's a lot of handsome disc golfers out there, man. You know, if I was going to say a nice, handsome, I mean, I was just playing with James Conrad on Tuesday, and I was getting pretty enamored with that flow. So.
It's hard to resist the hair, isn't it?
It really is. You know, yeah, I'm going to have to give it to JC. I mean, he's got it going. He's got his style.
I like it, man. I like it. All right, so that's a good segue into our lightning round questions. We like to hit people with some quick questions before we go, and just give me the first answer that pops in your head. Does that sound good?
All right, bring it.
All right, favorite course on tour?
Favorite course on tour, Maple Hill.
Okay, most difficult course on tour?
Most difficult course on tour, Maple Hill.
All right. I know this answer is not going to be Maple Hill. Most overrated course on tour?
Oh, don't do this to me. Most overrated course on tour, I would have to say, I love being in Arizona very much, but I would have to say the Memorial courses.
Okay. Your favorite
I'm
food?
Sorry to my Arizona people.
I don't think that's the first time we've heard that. So
no, definitely not. Definitely not. your favorite food when you're out on the road, like what city or whatever you look forward to going to that has the best food?
Favorite food. So I just was hating on Arizona, but I'm going to have to give it up to them. I can always find some great Thai food down there. So
okay,
I'll say AZ or Vegas.
Okay, more difficult hole. Hole 17 at USDGC, or hole 16, the island at the Emporia Country Club for GBO.
Hole 16 at Emporia for sure. I mean, 17 usually has more pressure on the line and more, you know, it means more. But 16, man, that's a tough one to stick.
Okay, if you were going to, and this is a good question, I think, because I've always heard, like Paul Ulberry has raved in the past about how tremendous of an athlete you are. So if you were going to play a sport, any sport besides disc golf, what would it be?
It would definitely be baseball. That baseball is my first love growing up. My uncle was a Hall of Fame baseball player, Paul Molitor. So I grew up being the biggest baseball fan.
Wait, what? Paul Molitor's your uncle?
Yeah, that's my mom's brother.
No way.
Yeah.
I did not know this information.
Yeah, some of the generation of kids coming up don't really even know who he is. But yeah, you know, growing up in Minnesota, he was playing for the Brewers for 15 years.
Right.
So I got to go to Milwaukee, you know, many weekends every summer and watch him play. So baseball was definitely my first love, and you know what I wanted to be when I grew up when I was a kid for sure.
Were you big? Were you a big Kirby Puckett fan?
Oh, the biggest, of course. Who does? Everyone loves Kirby in Minnesota.
You kind of have to. All right, if you could have any superpower, what would it be?
Life eternal.
What was that one?
Life eternal.
Life eternal. I like it.
I'm with you, man.
There's just so much to experience. I get fear of loss easily.
You just You just gotta be a vampire.
Right?
That's your in.
There you go. Yeah.
Well, listening to some of these Elon Musk podcasts, we might not be too far off. Who knows?
Yeah, hopefully not.
I love it. All right. If you weren't a professional disc golfer and course designer, what kind of career would you have gone into otherwise?
Well, I went to school for conservation biology at the University of Minnesota, so I would have to say something as far as working with outdoors, some kind of conservation biologist. That would I could definitely live with that, working outdoors and working in with nature and animals. That'd be a good life.
Okay. If you could have one dinner with one person of your choice, living or dead, who would it be?
Ooh, I just want to go out with Ernest Hemingway just for one night drinking.
Ooh, that's an interesting one. I don't think we've gotten that one yet.
Good.
I like it.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Ernest.
Okay. You're stuck on a desert island and you only get to watch one movie for the rest of your life. What's it going to be?
Ooh. Oh my gosh. I have my two favorite movies. I got to choose one. I'm going to go with Jeremiah Johnson because that would be fitting, because it's about a man who ends up in the mountains after he's done with society and becomes a mountain man. So I guess that would be fitting for being alone on an island.
All right. And the last one, cats or dogs?
Oh, man, it's got to be cats. I love my Chi-Chi.
All right, man. All right. Well, Kale, thanks so much, man. We appreciate it. Thank you for letting us lob some questions, both goofy and serious, at you. And, you know, we can't wait to see how everything comes out of the preserve. So good luck, man.
Well, nice. I appreciate you guys having me on. And I'm so excited for everyone to watch all the footage when we get the Preserve Championships here in July. I think it's going to go great.
And before that, you've got the Majestic, right, next week?
Yeah, we got the Majestic Amateur Championships this weekend and then the Pro Majestic next weekend. So we're gonna be staying busy.
Awesome, man. Good luck. Thanks for the time. And let's get you back on the show again soon.
Yeah, let's do it. Thank you both.
That was Kale Leviska, and we'll be back here in just a moment on PGA Radio. Sarah, the hot rounds, finally, after however many weeks of being cold, very, very cold, to the point that they were frozen and non-existent, are back. So can you please do us the honors of giving us the Birdie Fuel Coffee hot rounds?
Yes, but before that, speaking of Birdie Fuel, We launched our Birdie Fuel Hot Rounds coffee this week.
Yes.
And you can go to birdiefuelcoffee.com and get 10% off of anything on the website using the code PDGA Radio.
Yep. And we recommend that you buy Hot Round.
Hot Round, of course. Yeah. Duh. What else would you buy?
Nobody else is as cool as us on who's sponsored by them. So clearly us. Very yeah.
True. Okay. Well, of course, if you have listened to the show over the past couple of years, you know that I'm terrible at pronouncing.
Throwing you right back into the fire.
Oh my gosh. Of course, the very first person that I have to talk about, there's no way I'm pronouncing her last name correctly or the name of the tournament. So Katarina, can you
help her out here? Zyptovska.
Okay, I'll take it. At the
Reykjavik Open in Iceland.
And that was in Iceland, yeah. She shot a 746, her third round to take second place. So congratulations on being the first hot round back from
the break. First hot round back.
Yeah.
There we go.
The next is Hope Brown. She played the Welcome Back Flex Start over in New Bern, North Carolina, and she shot an 820 her first round to take second place. Oh, the next one's another killer. Colbrun.
Oh, you can do this.
Missed Powell's daughter. I know the daughter thing. If you watch CrossFit, you know that there's a lot of Icelandic women, and their names are like Joseph's daughter,
Joseph's
daughter.
So yeah, this is Paul's daughter.
Yeah, and then a lot of the men are like, well, like Lamberson, that's my previous name, things like
there
that.
There you go.
So okay. At least I got the second half of her last name. She also played that same event that I can't pronounce in Iceland, and she shot an 848 her first round to take first place. Congratulations. The next was Emily Garner, shot an 882 at the Welcome Back Flex Start, her first round to take first place. And the hottest round of the week was Kat Merch. Okay. She played the Prodigy Discs Presents Let's Get Back to Golf at Persimmon Ridge. Love it. In Greenbrier, Arkansas. And she shot a 907 her first round to take first place.
Very nice. Very nice. We're going to stick with the Let's Get Back to Golf at Persimmon Ridge to start the MPO side of the hot rounds. Abraham Behena with a 1029 rated first round took fifth place at that event. And then John Sanders took second place at that event with a 10:30 rated second round. And then our other event on the hot rounds on the MPO side this week took place in Amity, Oregon. This was the Memorial Day at Dave's C tier. I'm going to forever call it the Weekend at Bernie's C tier. This was nice. From Taryn. So Taryn Ferguson and Ryan Robinson and Travis Head all shot 10:33 rated rounds at the event. Scott Withers won the event with a 10:42 rated opening round. Chris Nelson matched that opening round to come in fourth place. And that all the way brings us to our hottest rated round. You know him, you love him. His name is Kevin Jones. And he was doing his thing in his home state of Arkansas at the Let's Get Back to Golf with a 10:68 rated second round. He won that event. We are back, man. And if you want to celebrate, go over to birdiefuelcoffee.com for some hot round coffee. Again, they're going to be the sponsor of hot rounds moving forward, and we're just pumped to be back. So thank you to everyone who wants to support PDJ Radio and Birdie Fuel Coffee. PDJ Radio, code at checkout, 10% off. Good stuff. All right, Sarah, I feel like I am a little caffeinated on Birdie Fuel right now, even though I'm not. I'm waiting for mine in the mail. But
yes.
I'm just so stoked the hot rounds are back. So we are going to now, we got a new segment. We've needed to do segments for a while. If you are a listener to this show and you have some suggestions on segments or some suggestions incoming for this segment, email us, radio@pdga.com. We do want to hear your feedback, especially on what you think on this new segment, which we are going to call Run It or Lay Up. It's pretty simple. We're going to throw out some basic statements, some related to disc golf, but also some related to pop culture slash maybe politics. We won't get too political here, but pop culture and politics kind of merge right now, unfortunately. Oh, yeah. We need to get back to just pop culture.
Or maybe just things that we've done in our everyday life that nobody cares about, but we want to talk about.
I can think
of lots of things.
Yeah, exactly. So, and basically we have to decide, you're going to run it that means you like it, you're confident in it, you feel good. Yeah, keep it. Or you're going to lay up. Nah, you don't agree, you don't want it. So pretty basic. So, Sarah, we talked about the Disc Golf Pro Tour earlier in the show. They have 11 events scheduled right now. Do you feel like by the end of the season, with the whole coronavirus situation still, how do you feel? Are they still? So my statement is this: Disc Golf Pro Tour will still have 11 events this year. Run it or lay up.
I want to run it. I want to run it real bad. But I'm trying to be realistic in that everyday things change. And I read on the Disc Golf Pro Tour website that they're making decisions 6 weeks out for each event, whether they're going to run it or lay up. Haha. See what I did there? And yeah. Things are going to change on a dime. Like there's, you know, physicians saying that there's going to be an uptick in, you know, as the country opens back up, we're going to see an uptick in infected people and hospitalizations, and who knows where that, if that's going to happen and where it's going to happen. So the realistic side of me is going to lay up on this one.
All right. I am going to go against the grain with this. I'm going to run it. And here's why.
Okay.
I totally agree with you that things are going to tick up again, but the Disc Golf Pro Tour has this little thing in their back pocket called the Silver Series, where they have these other events that they work in together and are kind of like the farm team, if you will, of the Disc Golf Pro Tour. I could easily, let's say an Idlewild has to cancel, which is never going to happen. That's in Kentucky. I probably picked the worst example. they could potentially, you know, promote one of the Silver Series to the big leagues, if you will. So I think we'll still be talking about 11 events unless we have something super, super drastic like the original big shutdowns. And if I'm taking the pulse of America right now, that's probably not happening. So I'm going to run that one.
All right. I like it. I like your thought process there. All right. Next one. Statement. My statement is Paul McBeth wins the first Disc Golf Pro Tour event back.
So that would be the Dynamic Disc Open.
Yes.
I'm running that one all day. Like, it's Paul McBeth. He won the GBO last year, and he has earned the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah. Here's where my head is on this one. We only know as much as people share on social media, unless you're like besties with someone and you're sure talking to them all the time. We don't know how much or how little people are practicing. What we do know is that Paul McBeth treats disc golf like a professional full-time job, and that he's not taking, I would assume that he's not taking this time to like sit on the couch watching Netflix eating Cinnamon Toast Crunch cereal.
All right, but if Paul McBeth is 500 pounds at the Dynamic Disc Open, did you just, I don't watch Netflix that much. I do eat Cinnamon Toast Crunch. If Paul McBeth comes back and is 500 pounds, you're gonna eat your words again. It's gonna be great.
I know. I like making just like huge generalized statements about Paul McBeth, like doing things or not doing things. So, I guess all of that to say, I was just talking around the fact that I'm going to say run it.
Yeah. Yeah. He's earned the benefit of the doubt. Now on a similar note, then I will throw this one out there. Paige Pierce wins the Dynamic Disc Open. You going to run that or are you going to lay up?
See, this is another one. It's like, I have no idea what she's doing right now. I really haven't been seeing much disc golf action from her, but that's all of my perception on social media, which is not real life. What? So yeah, sorry to break it to you. Social media is not real life.
Oh man.
Sorry. But again, it's like, I feel like there's a better chance that she will win versus not win. And if you play your odd, if you're actually going for like an island green and you're like, man, should I run it or lay up? You're trying to like play your odds. You're like, I feel more confident running it than I do not running it and then taking a four anyway. So this is one of those cases where I feel better. I don't know if that made sense or not.
Are you running it or laying up?
I'm running it.
Okay. I'm laying this one up and here's why. Yes, Paige Pierce is the best women's disc golfer. However, I have noticed in the past that early seasons or earlier in the season, she is a little bit slower of a starter. I'm not saying that she's going to come out and come in fifth, sixth. She's probably going to come in second if she does anything, or she might win it. However, with the long layoff, with not knowing exactly what's going on, I'm not quite as confident in her to just come back blazing out of the gates. Will it surprise me? No. But I'm going to lay that one up because I'm not as confident. And that's okay. What you do when you're not as confident. You lay it up. Okay, we're gonna oh no, this one's you. You get to start this one, Sarah.
Okay.
We're shifting gears.
All right, we're shifting gears pretty severely here. Joe Biden in a mask.
Joe Biden in a mask. Okay, yeah, this was like quite the
kerfuffle. Not a Halloween mask, a coronavirus
mask for out in public. Yeah. I'm running that one. He looked like a badass. Did you play Mortal Kombat as a kid? He looked like one of the dudes on Mortal Kombat.
Very true. Yeah.
Running that one all day, and it's helping save people's lives.
Yeah. Okay. I was going to agree with you, but on your second, on your second justification for that he's making a statement and other, health officials and politicians done it. And I think it's making a good statement that we should also be doing it. So
I will, this is going to be a rare thing for me to say. In fact, I don't even want to say it because it's being recorded. I will give Mitch McConnell the smallest amount of credit because he is also wearing a mask and setting an example. Yeah. That's where it ends. Okay. Next one, Sarah, run it or lay up, naming your firstborn a series of symbols and numbers, a la Elon Musk and Grimes.
I feel like this would get an automatic eye roll from me if it were anybody else but Elon Musk. It's part of his brand. Like that, I mean, yeah, run it.
Okay. I'm laying this one up. As the guy who went through school his entire life with substitute teachers who I swear had never seen the name Steven spelled with a PH and called me Stefan, I would never put a child through that.
Okay.
So true. I'm laying
Very
that
true.
One.
All right. Next one. Zoom meetings taking the place of every work meeting that you ever have again.
Now, is this only on Zoom or is this you using Zoom as a synonym for video calls?
Video meetings.
I mean, yeah, I'll run that. That's great. Let's do it. I don't need to be in person to do
that. Okay, sorry. I maybe did not clarify this as much. Here's where I'm coming from this. I have worked remotely for 3 years. And in that 3 years, I think I did a video call with coworkers maybe 3 times. And now, all of a sudden, that coronavirus happened, I have to show my face to every single person that I talk to anytime we talk. So it could be like once a day. It could be 5 times a day. Every single meeting, we skip the phone.
You're having to adapt back to real life in an office.
No,
it's fine.
I'm laying this up.
So basically you just don't want, you want to lay it up because you don't
I'm
want
not even laying
to
it up. I'm not even showing up for the tournament or registering for the tournament. I don't need to see your face to connect with you. I'm sorry. If you're a coworker, a friend, sure.
I'll run it. I like it. I think it's good. I think it's good to see people. And, you're always taught. I mean, see, this is for some people, they have to it's proof of life a little bit.
Yeah. Email is
also sure you're alive and
just email
working.
Me. I'm much better at written communication than I am at verbal communication, which is hilarious.
I could email you from the beach, Sarah, not my office. Yeah. All right. Last one we have for runner layup this week, but if we do want, we would love to hear from some people, radio@pdj.com. Okay. Run it or lay up, Sarah, cutting your own hair. I'm taking this as quarantine time. Like you're in quarantine,
right.
You cut your own
this
hair.
This is mine. And this was actually really funny because I didn't realize you and I are two examples of you had your wife cut your hair and
I did.
Have like a reverse mullet. Because I refuse to cut my own hair. And I also don't think it's necessary for me to go. I'm also growing my hair out.
Do you have party in the front, business in the back?
Oh, yeah. It's actually like party on the top, business on the sides and back. It's crazy. It looks ridiculous. I'm glad we're not on video right now. So I'm going to lay this up. Like either don't let it.
You don't want to cut. You don't want to cut your
own
hair.
Just let it grow. Just have the natural vibes like me, or wait till you see a professional. Cause I've seen some pretty, pretty crazy haircuts out there.
Yeah. I'm going to lay it up as well. I'm also laying this one up. My neighbor tried to do the self haircut thing. it wasn't bad, but I saw it. It wasn't great. He was wearing a hat again real quick. But I did have my, I let my, I will say this. If this was let your significant other cut your hair, I would say run it if you're a dude. I'm not sure. Like, I would not be comfortable anywhere with scissors near my wife's hair. But like clippers, she gave me a mohawk. If you want to see my mohawk, you can go look at me on Instagram, on Twitter. I'm at 1 mile more. And all my fellow PDGA coworkers thought it was just like, I was just going to put it up for social media and then not have it. And then I showed up to our Zoom call on Tuesday morning with my hair in a mohawk. And they were like all surprised. Nice. But hey, man, I'm not going anywhere. Like,
I have one more story about this. So my husband Sean has been cutting his own hair for forever. Like,
of course he has. I mean, that's such a Sean thing.
Yeah, but he's like a low maintenance dude, and he just like takes the electric razor and just like, or the clippers rather, and just shaves it.
Yeah, that's all this was. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but he shaves it down to like a one or zero or whatever. So a couple days ago he did that, and he was turned around, and I like in the corner of my eye, I was like, did he leave like a giant chunk on the back of his hair? No, that's just a shadow. And I was like, don't say anything. It's just a shadow. 2 days later, he's standing with his back to me again. And I realized that it is a giant chunk. It's like 2 inches wide and the hair is like 2 inches long.
Missed a spot.
Just giant chunk. And he wears a hat a lot of times, but this chunk was below the hat line and he had gone to play disc golf with a buddy. And I was like,
did you fix it for him afterwards?
Well, he did it himself, but he couldn't believe it. He left such a big chunk. And I thought, and it's just, it goes to show that, like, you know, coronavirus, like we're all looking a little rough right now. And
you
got to
tell him though. You got to tell him.
No, I did. I thought it was a shadow. And I was like, no, it's just a shadow. And then I saw it in the daylight and was like, oh no, I let him go out in public.
All right. Yeah. That's like a worse version of when you let somebody go out with like stuff in their teeth. You don't know. If you ever see me in person, people, and I have something in my teeth, just tell me, like, please don't.
Same.
Just I will be not like, be hey,
there. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Do it. All right, so we'll hopefully get to some more runner lib in the future. That was fun. We need to do more fun things on this show like that. Sarah, before we end the show, you usually have a shout out. I have a quick shout out, and then I'm sure you probably have a shout out. But I keep stealing your shout out under the last couple weeks. I'm going to shout out another podcast. So it's actually not related to disc golf at all. It's called the Loser Kid Pinball Podcast. And it's run by a guy named Josh Roop, who I am going to be buying a pinball machine from, which we're pretty stoked about. And so we were like swapping podcast stories and things like that and wanted to give him a shout out. So if for some reason you listen to this podcast and also enjoy pinball, go check that out. It's the Loser Kid Pinball Podcast. Very well produced. Good stuff. You can learn a little bit more about another of these random niche hobbies that we all seem to have. I think, like, people with hobbies like this, I think, like, tend to like have similar veins of communication and similar hobbies. So
I didn't have a shout out, but I can always kind of come up with one.
You're on the spot.
No, I can come up with one for sure. Katrina Allen, my good friend, came out with her new disc golf pin today. It looks super awesome.
Oh, I haven't seen this one because she had one before that I really liked.
Yeah, and it looks...
Is this a new version?
I'm not sure if it's a new version. No, I think it's an entirely new concept. So...
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah, if you've seen her throw the little routine that she does before she does a drive, is like, it's very unique. It's very her. And so they kind of replicated what she looks like the position of her arm and legs and body and stuff before she throws. And that is on pre-sale right now and will ship out June 1st. So go check those out on discgolfpins.com.
Yeah, I really like their... They do a really good job, and they did this on her putting one as well, of the getting the sleeve.
Yeah,
tattoo.
I love it. It's super cool.
I love it. Yeah. Oh, and then also it looks like Madison Walker is also on pre-order.
Oh, nice. I didn't see that one.
For disc golf pins. So yeah, discgolfpins.com. Hey, we're giving free advertising. We gotta stop that. I'm just kidding. Disc golf pins is cool and they have all kinds of fun ones. I really liked it.
Yeah, the woman who runs disc golf pins is awesome too. She was actually supposed to play my ladies and gents event this year, but it will not be happening. So hopefully I'll meet her in person next year. We'll see.
I love this Back to the Future back of the box one.
Oh, I didn't see
That's
that.
Amazing. They got all kinds. Amazing. They got a lot of good ones.
Yeah.
They got states. You can rep your state. By the way, man, we didn't even really talk because we got into the show, but we're over the last thing I will say today. We have reopen sanctioning in more than 50% of the states in the U.S. and several countries. So we are getting back to it. It's very exciting. My colleagues on the event side, especially at the PGA, Mike Downs, Big Dog, Andrew Sweeten, and obviously our executive director, Joe Chargaloff, have all been like just crushing it in terms of, you know, looking at when and where disc golf can get started up again for sanctioning. So hopefully you can get out and play a tournament soon because they're happening again. So that's the ultimate shout out right there. Shout out to everyone who can go play a tournament this weekend.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. So on that note, Sarah, you have a good rest of the week, and we will catch up soon. That was Sarah Sinclair. I'm Steve Hill. This is PGA Radio. Be good to each other. We'll talk to you soon.